The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
The John Fredericks Radio Network. Thanks for being with us. Joining us now, Sam Rasool. Sam is a House of Delegates member. He's a Democrat, and Sam is from the Roanoke area, so he does represent Roanoke in the Southwest Virginia land, and he is joining us now. He had a blister. I love this press release yesterday. Short and sweet and blistering, and I'm going to read it, and then introduce him when he comes on. Here was his presser. Let me just get this. He says, this really made me laugh. I mean, it's sad, but so comes out. It's a paragraph and a half. Okay, best presser ever, right? Normally you get these press releases, they go on forever. You got to scroll. No, not Sam's. A paragraph. This guy went to how to communicate succinctly and efficiently. And he gets an A-plus for that for my grade. Roanoke, Virginia. Delegate Sam Rasool, Democrat, Roanoke City, condemns today's announcement that Norfolk Southern will lay off roughly 130 Roanoke workers. In quotes, "I am shocked and deeply disappointed to hear about Norfolk Southern's plans right after Labor Day," said Rasool. "Aside from financially harming families and creating a severe economic blow to the Roanoke Valley, this decision shows a blatant disregard for Roanoke's role in helping to build the railroad in our region." End quote. End press release. Sam Rasool, great to have you with us.
Great to be with you again, John. Thanks for having me.
Okay, look, I wanted to have you on Better Circumstances. But I saw this yesterday, and I got to tell you, this really pissed me off as well, even before your press release came off, because here's a company, Norfolk Southern Railroad, that you guys in the valley down there have spent all kinds of tax incentives on. You've done everything you could possibly do to help that company be successful. And then the day after Labor Day, they kick everybody in the teeth. They lay off 130 workers. Like, they just don't care. But they took all your money. They took all your incentives. They took all your work. They took all your enthusiasm. They took all your political favors. And then they kicked your constituents in the teeth by kicking them out the door.
Yeah, I mean, not only us, there were state tax dollars that were given to Norfolk Southern to even try to get them to keep some jobs over the past several years here, specifically in Norfolk. And unfortunately, here you have a firm that is going to make $3 billion in profits this year, just wipe these jobs away, good paying jobs. Look, I get it. Companies, if they're under economic pressures, have to make tough moves. This wasn't the case now. Or even when you're making different business decisions. But the reality is you can come up with a long-term plan, try to transition some of these folks out, invest in them just as they've invested in you, and figure out what works for your business model and for the community at the same time.
See, I agree with that. And I think when you have a relationship with a company, like a private company that's making $3 billion, and you have a public relationship with them, and you give them tax incentives, and you give them support in the community. I mean, you've gone on their behalf. You've made speeches on their behalf. You've gone to a city council on their behalf in the various areas to get zoning projects done. You've been their advocate for your constituents, and then they take all that, plus they take the incentive, plus they take the tax breaks. They take and take and take, and then they just kick you in the throat, basically, in order to save a couple dollars, because they're like, well, you know, we have these 130 employees. We don't really need them anymore. Let's not invest to transition them. Let's not invest to maybe there's another place for them. No, let's just cut them loose, 2 weeks severance, have a nice day, so we can make $3.1 billion after everything that's been done for them. This is why a lot of us are not in favor of these public private side partnerships, because at the end of the day, private companies do what is ever in their best interest for their shareholders, and that's here what Norfolk Southern did, with no regard to these employees. And the other thing is, laying them off the day after Labor Day, give me a break.
Yeah, this has happened. It's not just the first time it's happened. It's happened several times here in Roanoke. It happened in Norfolk a couple of times. And so what we see is this kind of monopolistic mentality really goes against everything that we believe in. I think most people can think back to right after the big depression, the Great Depression back in 1929. There were two schools of thought. And, you know, you had the New Deal coming through. But then modern conservative movement was built completely around being anti-monopoly. The conservatives blamed the crash that they had back then. They blamed all of this on monopolies and the hoarding of power with these few interests. And here you have Norfolk Southern, who feels like they have so much power that they can do this without any repercussion. And it goes against, whether you're liberal or conservative, it goes against what we believe in as Americans. And unfortunately, they keep doing it time and time again.
Well, that's why we have in this country antitrust laws. Unfortunately, you get a lot of carve-outs, and one of the carve-outs sometimes is for industries that, you know, they've been suffering, so there's not a lot of competition, and so they get various carve-outs. That's not necessarily the case here, but you're right. I mean, they're just too big. But, you know, whenever the governments come to them, and Atlanta did the same thing, they came to them with all kinds of incentives. Move here, give us your tax, give us your workers, give us your jobs. You know, come here to Atlanta. They gave a better deal than we gave, so they tuck tail and run to Atlanta and take all their executives there, and they took a lot of their higher-paying executives there, which pay the higher taxes. So we lost out on that after doing all this for them. And then they turn around and say, well, we're going to give you a refund. Like, screw that. You know, it's not about the refund. What about the blood, sweat, and tears that were put into this? But I really think their behavior in the Valley is despicable. And look, this is one of the reasons why a lot of us believe in, and I love what you said, you know, after the Depression, and true conservatives like me today still believe big is bad, right? Too big to fail. Big is not a good thing. Big is bad. We like things to be kept. That's why I was opposed to all the consolidation of the community banks and the local banks that happened after the bailout and things of that nature. That all that stuff is anti-consumer and it's anti-worker.
It really is. And while I'm pretty left to center on a lot of things, I love working with my conservative colleagues, because it's not really about left and right on these issues. It's really bottom up. And there are a bunch of conservative colleagues that I have in the General Assembly who try to push back on this, because whether it's the insurance company, cell phone industry, airlines, banks, you name it, you go on down the list, where these antitrust laws are not strictly enforced,
right,
where there's consolidation, it just hurts consumers. And people are just trying to make ends meet out there. And so when we have, you know, actions like what we saw, it hurts people for sure.
Hey, maybe if you guys take over, Sam, did you ever think about running for speaker?
No, that won't be a spot for me. But the reality is, of course, we got to get past get past Election Day. I'll be trying to do more to make sure that we value the human capital. I mean, workers are putting their sweat equity, their time and energy on the line, and we got to make sure that these working families don't feel like that they're forgotten, regardless of who's in charge.
We're chatting with House of Delegates member from Virginia, Delegate Sam Rasul, Democrat, Roanoke City. He's also somewhat of a populist, and he beats to his own drum. He's bucked leadership. In fact, one time the Democratic leadership pissed him off, so he just quit their leadership and thumbed his nose at him. So he does what he wants for his constituents. That's why we love having him on. Sam, let me ask you this. I think Republicans are in big trouble going into this election in November. I think the Senate is all but gone, and the House is going to be pretty close. Obviously, I think everyone says that. What's the Democrats' message? There's 65 days remaining. As part of the Democratic, as wanting to gain a majority, right? You want to gain a majority. Mm-hmm. Going into the fall, what's your, to Virginians, what is your message?
You know, it's both the best and worst thing about, I think, my party is the Democratic Party is just full of so many diverse voices. And we've tried to do our best to really be a big tent. The downside is, of course, you've got, from a messaging or, let's say, marketing perspective, there are a lot of different messages out there. What we do find is that if people are coming around a few different topics, you know, economic empowerment is critical. Trying to figure out what we can do about health care. I mean, we've seen a couple of Virginians die this year just because they couldn't access insulin. There are some basic, I think, kitchen table issues that are really resonating with folks as we move forward. Those are the things that I'm going to make sure stay on the forefront, whatever we can be doing to help these you know, working and vulnerable families.
Sam, where do you personally stand? If you're the majority, are you going to there's some things that are going to come out immediately. And I think Alfonso Lopez said, you're going to see in two afternoons what we've been trying to do here for three decades. And I believe him. I believe Alfonso. I think if you take control, what's going to happen is exactly what he said. Hold on to your hats. Fasten your seat belts. I don't think they're going to be messing around. Right to work is going to be the hottest issue. If you take control by a vote or two in the House and the Senate, are you going to vote personally to repeal Virginia's longstanding right to work law, which many people think is the reason why Virginia is number one again in the United States for business?
If I had to vote, I would vote to repeal it. I think that that it is far more complicated than that. We have, you know, quite a process, of course, through subcommittees, committees, House and Senate, and of course going on to the governor, depending on what form it takes. John, you know, look, the reality is it's not sustainable to be number one for business and be last for workers. I'm a business person. I come from that mold. And I talk about innovation. I talk about right-sizing regulation. I've worked with Republicans on this stuff. But it just doesn't make sense, especially in an economy where we're struggling to actually find the talent we need. How can Virginia go out there and compete while we're saying we're last for workers? So let's be good for business. But what's good for business? Any common sense CEO is going to tell you we cannot be last for workers.
The right to work law, though, basically that allows workers to not join a union and pay dues if they choose not to, so it's not compulsory. How is that anti-worker?
The you know what that really is a proxy for the conversation that we're having around should workers have as much or even a little bit more sway in negotiating contracts and being involved in the terms of their employment. You know, look, these jobs, which are union jobs, which are being cut from Norfolk Southern, mm-hmm. If they didn't have a union behind them, they might not get anything. At least now they'll get several months of health care, several months of severance, et cetera. I just think that we've gone way too far, and we just sat here and talked about that kind of greed hurting American families, hurting Virginia families. So while right to work in and of itself, we kind of blow it up probably bigger than what it is, probably because it is a proxy for this larger conversation of what do we want to do to be helping American families.
A lot of people concerned about Kathy Tran's third term trimester abortion legislation, Sam. A lot of people thought that was a bridge too far. It was a wake-up call for a lot of moderates looking at that, kind of shocked by it, didn't really even know what it meant. And then, of course, you had the governor's comments about keeping the baby comfortable. We've all been over that a million times. Can I assume that if the Democrats take over, that's number one thing to come down the pike?
I think people clearly don't know that infanticide is always been illegal and will always be illegal, that this fundamentally, the bill did not alter the way our laws have been since the mid-70s. What it was simply doing was trying to remove certain barriers that are in place. I think the reality is you know, Virginians, most Virginians feel very comfortable with where we're at today, and many of us felt very uncomfortable with the attack in recent years on making it harder for women's health care. So, you know, to me, there isn't a long list of unfinished business with regards to women's health care in Virginia, because we've done pretty well relative to what we've seen in some other states. But clearly we need to be mindful that, you know, there are businesses that do not want to see this kind of nonsense, like we saw with HB2 down in North Carolina, and businesses flocked to Virginia because we want to get in these, you know, proxy social conversations. Let's just leave women alone. Let's let them make these good decisions for them and between them and their doctor. Let's let them do that. And in the meantime, there's a long list of things that we need to worry about. You know, criminal justice reform, economic development, transportation issues, education issues. There's a laundry list of issues that we're going to be prioritizing as Democrats as we move forward.
Are you in favor of eliminating cash bail?
Yes.
Yeah, so am I. I hate to get back to the third trimester thing, but, I mean, I get the talking points, and you guys are very well trained now in switching it to a North Carolina HB2, which has nothing to do with my question, and talking about women's health, which has nothing to do with the question. I'm telling you, Sam, there's a lot of people that understand Roe v. Wade. They get it, but they looked at the Kathy Tran, Debbie Rodman fiasco, and they said to themselves, wow, this is a bridge too far. This is a baby coming out of the birth canal. This is terminating a fetus that is coming out to be a baby. And, you know, really, have we gone that far with this? And, you know, this is not talking about the life of the woman being threatened. But don't you agree that there's just a lot of people where they look at that and they just say, you know, I can't get there. I just can't get there. And it's really not about the women's health. It's about making a choice at that moment that, no, I don't want this baby that's coming out of the womb, coming out of the birth canal. I mean, isn't that – can you understand that there would be some people like me that understand Roe v. Wade or Catholic, but really see that as just like we can't get there? I mean, it's just a bridge too far. Can you at least appreciate
that?
John,
the reality is, you know, I love you, man, but that's simply not true. This is really right-wing propagated talking points that make no sense at all. What we saw, if you actually read the bill, all what it did, the major thing was, if the woman's health is endangered, it reduced the number of physicians that would need to sign off on a late-term abortion, of which we've had none in the past 3 years, from three physicians to one. It didn't say, oh, now we're going to allow these things at the whim of a woman. That is simply a lie, and it is irresponsible for us to continue to propagate that. So yes, it did reduce a hurdle, switching it from three physicians to one, But it did not say that a woman has the right to terminate a pregnancy in a third term just because she feels like it. That is a lie.
Well, you've only got one doctor instead of three, but we're out of time. But let me just ask you this question. If there's been, you said there were no cases of this. If there is zero cases of it, why do we need the bill?
You know, it wasn't a well-timed bill. I'll just be honest with you. Many people, I agree with you. Many people were like, well, what was the need for the bill right now when there isn't, like, a bunch of stories about, you know, it being difficult for women to access these services? You're exactly right. Probably wasn't the right time for the bill. I just want to make sure that we are describing the bill correctly. Unfortunately, at you know how it is, it gets kicked around in the media across the country. We just need to make sure that people know exactly, you know, what the bill did and did not do.
So if it affects no one, zero from zero is zero. Why not just scrap it? Why not just say, you know what, this doesn't affect anybody, so let's just keep it at three doctors. Seems to be working fine because we have had zero requests for it or incidents of it. Why screw with it?
Well, you know, I don't know how, if there have ever been requests, but you're right as far as it not being a major issue that we hear about for sure. The question is, for example, you know, I'm down here in Southwest Virginia. If I'm down here in Southwest Virginia and there's a medical complication, you know, sometimes it's difficult to find one doctor. To quickly find three to be able to sign off on something, you know, it logically makes sense that, you know, you wouldn't want to put up that hurdle if the woman's health is in danger, because that's clearly all the bill was doing.
Sam, okay, at least you're willing to defend it, and I appreciate that. I just don't see why, if there's no cases of it, why you have to have the bill. I just, for the life of me, I can't. It seemed like Tram and Rodman were just jamming this down Catholic throats. That's the way it felt to me. And I guess you could read the fine print of it, but it was like, here we are, we can just, you know what, deal with Roe v. Wade, deal with it, and now we're going to just jam this down your throat, basically. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of Catholics that are, you know, not, they don't get up every day saying we have to overturn Roe v. Wade. They get it. Like, they understand it's part of culture. That thing was a bridge too far for a lot of people. And the lack of Democrats' empathy and even understanding that is beyond me. I mean, I just don't know why that's become the hill to die on for a lot of Democrats. I'm just saying that as from my own perspective.
You know, I think empathy is a very important thing. And for my Catholic and other friends who genuinely disagree on the abortion debate and feel that pain, it's important for us to empathize. Because, of course, empathy isn't agreeing. It's really understanding and appreciating the pain. And there are a lot of issues where I think it's important for us to be able to do that, to listen back and forth. So, you know, for me, it clearly was not the whole story was not told as we heard it, you know, propagate out there, especially on many news outlets. But the reality is that we've got some very important issues coming up this November that we need to focus on.
Sam, thank you very much. We're out of time. I always appreciate our spirited debate. Thank you for sending out that great, succinct, and cogent press release. One paragraph. I love it. Sam, thanks for being with us. Appreciate
it. Thanks for
it.
Having me, John.
AM 600. 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. The storm that already walloped the Virgin Islands, Bahamas, and North Carolina last at far eastern Canada, with hurricane-force winds for much of Sunday, knocked out power to hundreds of thousands of people before beginning the weekend late in the day. Dorian hit near the city of Halifax Saturday afternoon, ripping roofs off apartment buildings, toppling a huge construction crane, and uprooting trees. There were no reported deaths in Canada, though the storm was blamed for at least 50 elsewhere along its path. President Trump says he was set this weekend to meet at Camp David with leaders of the Taliban, but the president says he called off that meeting and a separate one with Afghanistan's president after a Taliban bombing that killed an American soldier and 11 other people. More details at srnnews.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Something you need to know about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners. They're on a mission to help as many people as possible to get out of pain. They've been a consistent sponsor of this show. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so, and then they're gone. Not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year. Why? Because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain, shoulder pain, hip pain, knee pain, etc. And now they're in less or no pain at all. That's the truth. I'd like you to try it. 3-week quick start is just $19.95. In 3 weeks, you'll know if it works. How's that? Is that a great thing or what? Cancel if it doesn't work. Otherwise, it's the best $19.95 you will have spent.
The five senses that most people possess are touch, taste, smell, sight, and hearing. As we age, our sense of touch, taste, and smell remain pretty much the same. However, our sight and our hearing do change. If you don't see well, you're going straight to the optometrist for an eye exam and some glasses. But what if you don't hear well? When's the last time you've had a hearing exam? Untreated hearing loss has been proven to accelerate dementia and Alzheimer's. At All About Hearing Aids, they get it. You're concerned about the cost and the appearance of hearing aids. Well, hear this. Hearing aid technology has drastically improved. They're almost invisible, they sound great, and some even have Bluetooth capability. But best of all About Hearing Aids sells their hearing aids for 50% less than the competition. Bring in a quote, and All About Hearing Aids will offer a comparable hearing aid for half that price. Don't wait. Call All About Hearing Aids today at 904-572-3079. That's 904-572-3079. Online at allabouthearingaids.net.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow. My passion has always been to help each and every one of you get the best sleep of your life. Radio has helped MyPillow become the amazing company that it is today. My employees and I want to thank you with some of the best discounts on my products ever. Just go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the new radio listener specials. Here you will find deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers, sheets, and so much more. For example, the body pillows are normally $89.99, but with your promo code, you can get them for just $29.99. And remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty.
Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the new radio listener specials, and get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the body pillow, for only $29.99. Enter promo code WBOB or call 800-950-9024 for these great radio specials.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Joining us now, Corey Lewandowski. Corey Lewandowski, the campaign manager, 2015-16 for President Trump, seriously considering a run for Senate in New Hampshire. Last time he was with us gave October as a potential time frame to make a decision. Lots to talk about. He's joining us now. Hey, Corey, great to have you, man.
Good morning. It's great to be back with you. Thank you.
Okay, Corey, let's go over some of these issues. Last time we were on, you were looking at October as a potential time frame for making a decision on your candidacy, and you said a lot would depend on how much money was raised by a couple of the candidates that were in there now. You laid down the benchmark of $2 million. Neither of these candidates are going to raise that. Is the end of October, November still your time frame in making a decision on running for U.S. Senate New Hampshire, Corey?
I think it is, John, and I think what we have to understand is that if you're going to go and defeat an entrenched incumbent like Gene Shaheen in my home state of New Hampshire, you have to have a couple things. One, I believe you need the support of the president and the administration and run as a candidate who will support this president's agenda. And number two, you need the financial resources to compete against a woman who has gotten very rich while in office but has the ability to raise tens of millions of dollars, because right now I don't think the Democrats believe that Gene Shaheen is a vulnerable individual unless I get in this race. And so we need to make sure that the candidate who's the Republican nominee has the financial resources to remind the people of New Hampshire that Gene Shaheen voted against Neil Gorsuch, she voted against Justice Kavanaugh, and she voted to continue to fund sanctuary cities for illegal immigration.
Well, Corey, without you in the race, the Democrats in New England are now putting their money into Maine trying to topple Susan Collins. So without you in the race right now, you're exactly right. They've basically given it to Gene Shaheen, saying that's going to be an easy win, and they're putting their resources in your northern neighbor. So let me tell you the consequences of you getting in politically, and this is the business I'm in. Not only do you become a viable candidate in New Hampshire, I think if you get in, you're going to be the nominee, and you're going to win, and you're going to beat Gene Shaheen. They have to pour millions and millions of dollars in here, which means they can't pour millions and millions of dollars into Maine or somewhere else, Colorado with Hickenlooper. I mean, there's only so much money to go around. There's only so many resources. So you tie them up, and you beat them, and I think that's would be an asset to Susan Collins. So there's a lot of ramifications here.
Well, there's no question about it. And you look at some of the Republicans who we've already recruited to run for the U.S. Senate. I think of John James in Michigan, a very high-profile race. John ran 2 years ago, lost that seat. He's going to run for the seat against a much lesser-known candidate, incumbent U.S. senator. But there are only a few places where the Republicans can be on offense, and I think New Hampshire is one of them. I think Michigan is one of them, if I get in the race in New Hampshire. And so the Democrats need to make sure that they're held accountable for the far left-wing policies that they are espousing. Don't forget, Gene Shaheen nor any of the Democrats in the U.S. Senate have pushed back on this notion that the world is going to end in 12 years, that the biggest threat to our society is climate change. They have not answered for the Rashid Tlaibs of the world, the anti-Jewish sentiment that they continue to espouse. These people are voting in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi, with Chuck Schumer, and with the AOC plus three crowd. And I don't believe either in New Hampshire, where I live, or in Michigan, where John James is running, that is what the people of those states want.
Corey, let's get to the press conference. Let's just start there. Monday, I was kind of shocked by it, I have to be honest. Representative Tlaib and Representative Omar Ilan doing a press conference chastising, I guess, all U.S. policy for giving billions of dollars in aid, which we've done to Israel for many, many years, and saying that the aid should be contingent upon Palestine getting their own state. And right now, Jared Kushner, who's been negotiating a peace process, he is now proposing a two-state solution in Palestine. I, for the life of me, have never seen congressmen get up that make anti-Semite comments, anti-Israel comments, and then basically call for cutting U.S. aid to Israel and leveraging it as contingent upon a two-state solving the problem for Palestine. How do you stand on that?
Well, it's very, very simple, John. Israel is our greatest ally in the region. Benjamin Netanyahu and President Donald Trump work hand and glove so that they know that if we need help in the Middle East or they need help, we will be there by each other's side as countries to make sure that we are fighting for the freedoms that our people so desperately need. And so, you know, Rashid Tlaib wants to politicize this whole issue. And when you see far left-wing activists like Bill Maher calling out these members of Congress for the way that they are treating Israel, it should really be a wake-up call for Nancy Pelosi that this is where her Democratic Party is. And predominantly, American Jewish voters vote Democrat. But I have to think that this rhetoric coming from these two members of Congress is going to change their minds and say, if we care anything about Israel, where our fathers or grandfathers or they came from, they'll be voting right. Republican for a change. And I'm not here to tell you that, you know, Donald Trump is going to get 100% of the Jewish vote, but I don't believe that any president in modern history has done more for the nation of Israel than Donald Trump has, whether it's recognizing Jerusalem as the actual capital, if it's the recognition of the Golan Heights. You know, they named a town in there, in Israel, on behalf of Donald Trump, because Netanyahu said it. He has been the best friend to Israel of any president he's ever worked with, and the exact opposite of that is true with these members of Congress who chastise Jewish people and think that the whole issue should be contingent on Palestine, who we all know has not been very forthcoming in trying to come up with a solution.
Well, they will not even sit down and negotiate with Greenblatt, Jared Kushner, or the U.S. Trump administration contingent. They will not. And I even interviewed the foreign minister, I believe it was, of Palestine, the chief spokesperson and foreign minister. And basically they said they're not even going to come to the table and have a conversation with administration in their effort to get peace. So, I mean, look, if you can't talk, you can't get anything done. I want to get to the president's jawboning Jerome Powell. He would like to see another rate cut for the Fed to keep the economy soaring along, saying that we're not competitive now with Asia. We're not competitive with EU either because their rates are lower. The president looking for another rate cut in September, the next quarter. The Democrats criticizing the president for putting undue pressure on Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, but this is typical jawboning. Barack Obama did the exact same thing with Janet Yellen when she was there. Are you in favor of the Fed's in September doing another rate cut? Corey, if you were senator, would you be in favor of that?
Well, I think the short answer is I would be. And the reason I would be is we have now recovered from the atrocious Barack Obama policies. We have more people working today. But it's not just about our people in our country who are working. We need to compete in the global marketplace. And not having a level playing field, we have seen, has hurt the United States for 30 years. So if we want to remain competitive in the global marketplace, we have to have a monetary policy which is giving us, if not an advantage, at least a level playing field. And by cutting the rates, it gives us, once again, an opportunity to be competitive. Look, we have more workers working today than ever, but we can't just rely on that. We have to make sure that we are competing in the global marketplace because we've seen what China has done with their currency. We know that other countries have a much lower interest rate, and if we're going to compete in that environment, we need to be able to compete with the interest rates as well.
Okay, let's get to the president's new executive order laying out his own solution to the Flores Agreement yesterday, saying that they were going to do away with the 20-day rule that says if you come to the United States either as an unaccompanied minor or accompanied minor with an adult, you can only hold them for 20 days. Well, the average time to adjudicate an asylum claim is 50 days. And, of course, as you know, Corey, 90% of the asylum claims United States judges have ruled as being bogus and not worthy. So only 10% on average are worthy. So basically we have a catch and release program. So now what the president has said is, okay, starting immediately, we're going to get rid of the 20-day rule. We're going to keep the families together, so no separation. They're going to have facilities that are clean, well-maintained, recreation, can go outside, gaming, have fun, take care of everybody, feed them, clothe them. But we're going to wait until they can get in front of a judge in the United States, whether that be 25 days or 50 days. And then, obviously, if a judge says asylum, good to go. They have a process in the United States where they can stay. But if they're said your claim is not worthy, it's bogus, you have to go back. But they're not separating families and they're keeping everybody safe. What is the problem with that? Is that not a sensible plan? And as a prospective senator, how do you stand on that?
John, it's very simple, right? Nobody wants to see illegal immigration continue. And nobody wants to see when these families come across the border, they're separated. But what we have known and what we have seen is that children and young adults are often used as pawns in this terrible game where they're not related to other individuals. They say that they are. But what the president has said was, we're going to take action. The most important thing that we can do is we can close our border so that we know exactly who's coming into the country and for what purpose they're coming. Once we've done that, all of the rest of this is a fix. Now, the president has always said that this decision was a temporary decision. And I agree that we have to have a better solution of keeping families together if they are apprehended at the border for coming here illegally. I agree with that. I still think we have the fundamental problem that we have a porous southern border that's allowing individuals and families to take this terrible journey with much danger to them to come to this country and then cross the border illegally and claim asylum. This is not how the system is supposed to work. So I'm in favor of keeping families together, but I am much more in favor of preventing illegal immigration from continuing to occur into our country.
Corey, if you were to become senator from New Hampshire, we have an e-verify law in the country, which simply is not being seriously enforced by anybody. Do you think e-verify is the right way to go? And if companies violate that, would you be in favor of legislating stricter consequences for noncompliance?
Well, the answer is e-verify is one solution, and it's an important solution. And what we see is that companies who are following the rules as it relates to e-verify have the opportunity to bring people in on a temporary basis to do some temporary work that they can't find Americans to do. This is predominantly used, in some manufacturing or seasonal work environments, particularly the farming area. But we have to have e-verify. And look, I think we also, John, need to penalize those employers who are not using the system, who are using cheap labor, who aren't doing the proper paperwork. Look, we've now seen it on multiple occasions, and what that is really doing is it is taking jobs away from Americans who have the right and opportunity to go and take these jobs. But when these companies bring in individuals and don't use the e-verify system, they're skirting the law. I want to see larger penalties for these companies, and I want to see those CEOs held accountable for taking jobs away from American citizens.
Right. This is, I think, one of the most frustrating things. We talk about the unholy alliance. This is one of the areas where Republicans are just looking the other way, because many of these companies that are violating this are also their donors in the swamp. Corey, one of the issues I know that...
You're exactly right. The swamp is riddled with special interests who don't want the U.S. government to go after these business owners who aren't following the rules. I think it's unacceptable. And, John, I have to say one thing. I'm going to have to do today? I'm going to have to peel what? The bumper sticker of Inslee Swalwell, President, Vice President, off my car, because the breaking news last night, I know it's shocking to your listeners, Jay Inslee has dropped out of the race for president.
I know. That is a bumper sticker of all time, right? We also got Hickenlooper's gotten out now, so all the 1%ers starting to drop like flies. Let's get to the president's trade policy on China. Look, there's been no inflation right now, but the president said something yesterday that was interesting. He said, I could make a deal with China tomorrow and everybody would be happy and maybe that would solve some of the issues on Wall Street with stocks going up and down. But he says, I'm not going to make a bad deal because it's not in the best interest of the American people and the country. We've been ripped off for 50 years by them. If you were in the U.S. Senate today, would you be in favor of the president continuing to stand strong with these China tariffs in order to bring our supply chains back to the U.S.?
John, if I'm in the United States Senate, I'm encouraging the president to take the long view of what China has done to our economy, and it's time that we fight back, because we're going to look back on this administration in 20 or 30 years, and we're going to say, thank you, Mr. President, for standing up for American workers, because for too long, John, you know this. China has stolen our jobs. They've stolen our intellectual property. They have ripped our country off. They've subsidized their own companies at the detriment of companies trying to compete in the U.S. We've seen it with steel. We've seen it with so many different things, aluminum, you know, washing machines, you name it. China has been ripping us off every day, and the American consumer has not fully understood the impact of their intellectual property theft, their subsidizing of their companies. And so what I say to the president is, sir, look, I understand people on Wall Street are skittish. I don't care about Wall Street. I care about the people who work on Main Street. I care about the mom and dads who get up every day and have to go to work, and they look at their 401k plan and at the end of the month and they say, you know where this was 3 years ago? At a fraction of where it is today because of Donald Trump, because of $9.2 trillion in value he's created in the stock market. And what you have to remember when you go to the ballot box in November of 2020, what you have to remember is you ask yourself the same question, am I better off today than I was 4 years ago? And for those day traders and those Wall Street fat cats who make their living on the day-to-day of what's going on, hey, I don't care about them. And I know it sounds terrible, John, but it's the truth. I care about the people who are better off today than they were 3 years ago when Donald Trump was elected, and they'll be better off a year from now because of what Donald Trump is doing to stand up for American jobs. Because you give us a level playing field, John, against China or any other country in the world, we are the greatest, hardest-working people the world has ever known, and we will compete. But you can't compete against people who play unfair. And that's what this president is doing, is leveling the playing field.
We're with Corey Lewandowski. We've only got a couple more minutes. On the campaign trail, when you were the campaign manager, the president was an advocate of getting out of foreign entanglements and these perpetuous wars. He called for a look at withdrawing from Afghanistan. Right now, the Trump administration negotiating with the Taliban through the state of Qatar in Doha with their emir to put a plan together to get the majority of the 13,000 troops we have out of Afghanistan. So that's being met with huge resistance by the warmongers and the neocons there that we deal with in the swamp every day. If you're U.S. Senator, what is your position on Afghanistan?
It's very simple, John. You bring our men and women in uniform home unless there is a immediate strategic threat or rationale for keeping them there. And I think we need to keep some troops in Afghanistan, but we've been there for over 6,000 days. To put that in perspective, this war has gone on so long that people who are now serving in Afghanistan weren't even born when this started. This has been a colossal failure. Afghanistan has been a country that has had infighting going on for literally 2,000 years. And if you're telling me that from a strategic military position, we need to keep a large troop presence in Afghanistan, I want to see the data on it. Because I do think there has to be some limited amount of resources there, whether that's special forces, whether it's QRF, quick reactionary forces. But the truth is, we don't need, in my opinion, John, a large, massive U.S. troop buildup of our American troops in Afghanistan. I agree with the president. It's time to bring these men and women home because we have to understand what the mission was. And I believe this president knows that keeping those troops there is not furthering our mission. We need some show of force there, but I don't think we need what at the current levels that we have.
Last question, Corey, and I just have to ask you this, if you don't mind. In 2015, you named me, John Fredericks, as co-chairman of the Trump campaign in Virginia. I really appreciated that. It was one of the most fun and exciting things I've ever had to do. I'm vying for state chairman again for Virginia. I just want to know publicly if you think I did a good job since you did that, and if I have your unequivocal backing for state chairman of Virginia for the Trump campaign in 2020.
Well, John, as you know, I only made a couple good decisions, and bringing you on board as the state chairman of Virginia was one of them, because you saw something early on with Donald Trump that I don't think any other radio show host in the country saw. And so I saw that, you saw that, and I'll tell you this. Yeah, I think it would be a great decision for the campaign to bring you back on as a leader in Virginia. You're already a leader, a leadership role, a chairman role, working with the team who you already know to make sure that we're turning out the Trump voters in Virginia in 2020. I endorse you wholeheartedly, John.
Okay, Corey Lewandowski, thank you for that. We're really looking forward to your decision on running for U.S. Senate in New Hampshire. I'm telling you, if you get in, you're going to win. You're going to get elected to the U.S. Senate. Trump is going to win New Hampshire. I think your candidacy puts Trump as the favorite in New Hampshire because of the attention the state is going to get. And I think the president will do several rallies there. And I think he carries New Hampshire. And Corey Lewandowski, I think if you run, you're going to be the next U.S. senator from New Hampshire.
Well, thank you, John. I agree with you again. Boy, you're really smart. I think if I run, I'm the next U.S. senator from New Hampshire. And I promise you and your listeners, I'll be thinking about this decision over the next 4 or 5 weeks, and you'll hear it from me. I promise you first.
All right. Corey Lewandowski promises he'll announce his candidacy when he decides to do that on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Thank you, Corey, for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
September 7th, 1940. Nazi Germany begins heavy bombing of London and other major cities in Britain during World War II. CBS reporter Edward R. Murrow describes the devastation of what becomes known as the Blitz.
One may see in the light of flares, carefully hidden under canvas, human beings looking like broken, cast-away, dust-covered dolls, being lifted with careful hands out of a tunnel driven through to the basement of a bombed house.
1997. Mobutu Sese Seko, the former Central African dictator, dies in Morocco at age 66. It happens months after Mobutu is forced into exile following his disastrous rule of Zaire, now known as the Democratic Republic of Congo. 1977. In Washington, the Panama Canal treaties are signed. The agreement calls on the United States to eventually turn control of the waterway over to Panama during the next two decades. 1996. Rapper Tupac Shakur is fatally wounded in a drive-by shooting on his car in the Las Vegas Strip. Shakur dies from his injuries days later. His murder remains unsolved. 1979. Attention, SportsCenter fans. ESPN debuts on cable, the birth of a TV sports powerhouse. 1963. The Pro Football Hall of Fame is dedicated in Canton, Ohio, where what's now the NFL was formed more than four decades earlier. And 1936.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day.
Buddy Holly, one of the early stars of rock and roll, is born in Lubbock, Texas. Today in history, September 7th. Tim McGuire, The Associated Press.
Tis the season of high winds.